I wanted to know when you first became involved with the farm worker movement.
Well, that was before I started with the conference while I was a pastor in Carmichael. I was a member of the California Migrant Ministry, represented our church there. Now, you want to know how many years ago that is?
Yeah.
I have to add it up. I've been retired 12, 11, 22, 23, 24. That's about 25, 26 years ago. Uh-huh.
And at that time, was it the California Migrant Ministry, or was it divided
California
by?
Migrant
it was.
Ministry.
It was after it had no longer been divided by counties. Okay, because for a while it was divided by counties, like Fresno County Migrant Ministry. So.
Oh, is that so?
But this was when it had gotten it together as the California Migrant Ministry.
Yes, it was together as far back as I know. Mm-hmm. I came on maybe a year before Chris Stark came as the director.
So 1960?
Yes, I came here in 62, so that would be about right. What was the name of his predecessor?
Doug Still.
Doug Still.
Yeah. My husband was in the Rural Fringe Ministry in Mendota near Fresno under Doug Still.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Served a little small Methodist church, although he was Presbyterian. It's his first assignment after seminary. So you were serving on the state board.
Right.
And at that time, what were some of the major issues that the board was dealing with?
Well, of course, it began as a ministry to farm worker families, I guess as much as to farm workers themselves. It was concerned with what happened to children, conducted schools, I guess, or sessions at least for migrant worker children of migrant workers. So I guess pretty much in those days it was a matter of collecting the funds from the churches and ministering to the migrant workers in that way. Mm-hmm. And then the next step, I guess, was community development. We had a young man, Jim Drake. Mm-hmm. He was Presbyterian to start with, I think.
I know Jim.
Do you know Jim? Mm-hmm. Now, he was working... He started to work for us in Goshen, and his purpose there was really defined as community service. And
when you say for us, who do you mean by us?
Well, I was thinking of the California Migrant Ministry. But the United Church of Christ paid his salary. That was a part of our contribution. And I ordained him. He came to the United Church and wanted to be ordained. And then, of course, from there on, he was the man who led us into supporting a strike. The rose, what did they call them, the rose cutters, or the people who trim rose bushes, they went on a strike for our wages. And Jim said, well, I'm going to do it. If you don't want to support me in it, well, then I'll do it on my vacation time. And that was the beginning of the real, when the farm worker movement became a real issue. I was also serving, of course, as the staff person for our committee on, what do we call it? It was really the Social Action Committee. We decided to support him.
Was that the Regional Social Concerns Committee?
Well, that was a committee for Northern California Conference.
Mm-hmm, for the conference, okay.
And it starts at Porterville and goes up to the border of the state. That was the conference that we served.
Is it the same today?
Same today. So that was the time we had to wrestle with the whole question of whether it was, you know, right for the church to support a strike movement. That was the basic issue. And I remember we fought it through, or thought it through, on the California Migrant Ministry board, and then we, of course, supporting Jim Drake, thought it through on our local commission on church and community. I think that was the official name of it. And then, of course, from there on, we supported Caesar in his whole operation.
Would you say the local commission, that was the...
Same thing as the...
For the conference?
The Northern California Conference.
And that decision that you made, that you referred to, the decision to support the strike, that was a decision by that commission. And that was
first by the California Migrant Ministry, uh-huh. And then by our commission, because we were paying Jim Drake's salary. Mm-hmm. And Jim called our conference minister at that time, and I think I was talking to him, you know, through that whole period.
What year would that have been?
Well, now you'll have to check that with Chris. I imagine he has the dates down. I don't have any record, you know, available now. I don't know if they're still in existence at the conference office or not. I'll have to talk to Jim and to Chris. They could give you the exact date.
Okay. All right. The decision by the commission was that a tough decision to come to?
I don't exactly remember. We had a, see you later. I don't think we had any real strong opposition on the commission itself. But even before that time, I can remember one, I guess it was an annual meeting. The growers started to oppose even what we were doing, you know, to the California Migrant Ministry before the time that we supported Caesar's strike. I can remember Mr. and Mrs. Lester from the San Jose area who gave me my first confrontation.
And this was just about community development.
This was community development, what we were doing, and how it affected the growers. Because, of course, our church has churches up and down the valley, and their members are primarily growers. Mm-hmm. And that's where the opposition to our involvement came from the very beginning, and then it intensified.
How did the community development affect growers? How did they perceive that? I mean, this was things like curbs and gutters, or getting a community center, that type of thing?
Type of thing that he did in Goshen. He moved among the people, mm-hmm. And then we built that community center down there. The specific activities, I don't recall anymore. But the thing that happened, of course, was that Jim saw more and more that in order really to affect and to alter the conditions of the migrant ministers, of the migrant laborers, they would have to do more than simply minister to one community. That it needed to be a countywide operation to change the basic structures. Now, the details I don't remember anymore. But that was how he then moved into the Porterville area. I think he began to work there.
Was that when the rent strike was being organized in the Woodville Linnell labor camps, Tulare County?
Yeah, I think probably that was.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember the details.
That was in 64.
Mm-hmm.
Going up for a big march, church people entered into for that.
It was for the rent strike
in, uh-huh,
Porterville area?
Yeah, in Tulare County, the Woodville and Nell labor camps.
I remember that.
They had raised the rent 40%.
I remember that. Were you involved at that time?
Just really peripherally, but we had been in Mendota for 3 years until we left in 61 and went to L.A.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chris came that year as the director of Migrant Ministry, and he moved to a house near where we lived and near our church, and he's a Presbyterian also. So,
yeah, sure.
So he joined, or his family joined our church.
Oh, I see.
Where my husband was serving.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stayed in pretty good contact because of seeing him regularly. And he asked me to go up to that march. I'd never done anything like that before in my life. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot of us got initiated in a lot of ways.
That's right.
Well, so I understand that by the time you came on the UCC staff for the conference,
mm-hmm.
that you really were the front man a lot for dealing with churches and people that were real upset about the support for the farm workers.
Right. With strong support by Dr. Narberg, Richard Narberg.
Yeah.
He and I saw eye to eye on those things. And I think both of us worked together. I was, I had the responsibility, of course, for the budget. And where the confrontation came first was in our annual meetings.
Mm-hmm.
The grower sent representative there. And then we had, of course, our annual report in terms of what we were doing and the amount of money that we were putting into farm labor through the support of Jim Drake. Mm-hmm. And in other ways. And that's where the opposition began to crystallize. Because the growers in the valley said, of course, what you're doing is really organizing people to oppose us. We, of course, tried very hard to interpret to them how this became a part of the Christian mission. I had long before thought through and learned that in order to achieve social justice, you have to try to match power with power. As long as the farm workers were not organized, they had no way of standing up to the growers and requesting and winning, say, increases in salary and in working conditions. So that was the issue. And I sort of grew up social action minded. I knew Ronald Niebuhr very well from the time I was a small boy. And I knew the story of what he had done in Detroit with the auto workers.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the few ministers who, you know, led out for their rights and stood behind them. So I had come to California, and one of the things I had resolved to do was to do all I could to keep the church involved in this, in changing and building these kind of structures, because I knew that realistically you can't talk about social justice unless you match power with power, and in that way begin to work to achieve more rights for the farm workers. And for Cesar Chavez at that time was beginning his labor organization. And he said on several occasions that how much he appreciated the support of the churches in those days, that they helped him to get started. So that's the way the thing developed. And then we began to get opposition from individual churches up and down the valley. We would go and meet with growers. I remember Shirley Green was working for our denomination at that time. And he and I met with our church in Lodi, which is one of the largest churches. Another time we met to, I guess it was something like 200 growers I don't remember if that, I think that was, yeah, that was Narberg and I met with them. It was later. One night I went down to Porterville and met with the people in that church for about 4 hours. Tried to answer their questions, but we had little success. They, of course, saw very soon that the labor the union would demand or work for higher wages. They saw that as affecting their profits. Mm-hmm. So that was the issue. And finally, they said to us, "You have no right to take our money, the money we give in benevolences, and use it to organize or to support farm labor who are opposing us in terms of our business, our workaday world." So that was the issue that finally won on the conference level in terms of our withdrawing that financial support.
When was that?
I'd have to look it up in the records. I couldn't tell you right off. It was several years before I retired.
Would have been in the 70s then.
I imagine. But at that time, John Moyer had become the representative of our Board of Home Missions, our Board of National Missions in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. our national board. He had come, he would make regular trips out here. Mm-hmm. The first trip that he made, it was my responsibility to acquaint him with the work that they were supporting. I took him up to Modoc County. We had a larger parish there, Trinity County. And then I took him down to meet Cesar Chavez. And we had dinner with him. And of course, that made it possible for him to learn to know the farm labor movement. Mm-hmm. So he went back to Philadelphia, and then the Board for Home Missions became involved and supported it to a much larger degree than we could as a country.
So what you couldn't maintain here, you passed on to the National Church.
That's right. For a time, we were both supporting it. They, in a much greater degree, Chris can tell you what the amounts of money are. We never advertised them because there was no point in it. It would just increase the ire of the growers. But they still do. They still support Caesar.
I know John.
Do you know John?
Yes, I sure do.
Well, he and I became very good friends.
Mm-hmm. He's a fine person and such a staunch supporter of the union.
He and, what was the name of the vice president of the Board for Homeland Ministries? That's the official name. The Board for Homeland Ministries. I'll come up with that name before we finish today. But he is a man, too, who is a strong supporter of social justice. He was a conscientious objector as a young man.
Didn't know that.
So we had that support from the national people. And that, of course, gave me a great deal of satisfaction, and we could put our small amount into the budget. That they were doing much more than we could. We had helped them get involved.
So were the budget amounts mainly for Jim's salary and then a certain other amount for the California Margaret Ministry?
That, I think, as I recall, that basically was it. Mm-hmm. Jim's salary.
So or did Jim's salary get maintained, or did that get cut as well as the support for the ministry?
Well, I'm trying to think what had happened by that time. That history is not very clear in my mind. That just when we stopped supporting, paying Jim's salary. I'd have to look into the records to see that. I could maybe talk to Dick Narberg. He could tell me.
I'm going to be seeing Dick.
You're going to be seeing him?
Yeah, I have never met him, but I look forward to it.
Well, you got a real treat in store. He's a great person.
It's tomorrow afternoon.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, he can give you, I think, clearer on those, the details of those dates. I would have to go and look at the records to see what happened to that budget.
You know, I met with Chris when I was first developing the outline for this book, just to test my ideas and to see what he thought of them, if he would have any corrections, course corrections to suggest.
Yes.
And at the end of that interview, we spent 3 hours together up there at La Paz. This was in, I guess, October. And I said, who should I meet with, Chris? And he told me to meet with you, and he told me to meet with Cliff and with Dick Norberg and a few other people. But he said that you and Dick were very important to meet with. And he said, I want to include information about some of the
sort of led us into the struggle. But I think basically it was the fact that both Richard Norberg and I were strongly supported, that we had some real convictions on the social involvement of the church and the importance of the struggle for justice. Now, of course, what happens when you bring an issue like that into the church, what you have is a conflict between such support of the struggle for justice and how it affects the structures of the church. Now, you see, what happened was that one or two churches in the valley threatened to leave our fellowship and came very close to it. So that becomes the issue. The issue is, do we stand by what's necessary to keep our structure strong, our organization, or are we willing to take risks which may endanger at least that structure in a smaller or greater degree? That's always been the story of the church. And almost inevitably, it has decided in favor of the status quo. The church has been on the side of the status quo, rather than making the prophetic imperative primary or even equal to the welfare of the organization of the church. Now, what happened, of course, after Dick left, we had a new conference minister, and he immediately saw that there was a rift in the conference between those churches and the strong supporters of social action. So he went in the other direction. He said, I remember when John and, what's the name of the man over here in Oakland, is now the director of the California Migrant Ministry?
Fred Eister?
Yeah, Fred Eister, went to see John Deckenbach, who sort of was my successor in terms of the responsibilities in the conference. And he said, right. He said to them, you know, if it came to a matter of losing a church or supporting the farm ministry, well, I'd always decide in favor of saving the church. Well, there it is in a nutshell. See? And what we had tried to do is we continued to support with a continual effort to try to educate the grower. Now, Richard Norberg was really a key factor in that because he has a remarkable personality and an ability to win people. You know, he's pretty hard to hate. But he was firm in his support. So what we were doing, we were trying to interpret, trying to help them to see and to understand that this was a part, an important part of the Christian mission. And they inevitably opposed him. I remember one time we had a meeting in somewhere in the valley, and we were discussing, you know, the welfare of the growers, and I told him, I said, what you have to fear is the power of those people who are on top of you. I'm thinking of the egg industry particularly. You know, what happened in the Petaluma area was that gradually the larger corporations took over the whole manner of growing chickens, and producing eggs and selling eggs. See, what you have to really to fear and what you have to work against is, you know, what the structure on top is going to do in terms of the growers, what the large corporation farms are going to do to you in terms of affecting Christ, in terms of crowding you out, rather than the farmer.
Could any of them hear that?
They couldn't.
Because that's who they really like to identify with, rather than, it seemed to me, rather than the farm workers. I mean, who wanted to identify with the farm workers?
That's right.
But their wages were really, smaller farmers, their wages were really not worth any more than what people who were farm workers were being paid.
That time?
Yeah. I mean, that's how it seemed to me.
That's so.
But I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think they still came out with a greater profit than the farm laborers did. But I think it was an issue for them. Of course, today in the Middle West, the farmers are really up against it.
Do you think that there was any validity to the smaller farmers' fears that they couldn't make a living if they had to pay a union wage?
Well, I think there you'd have to talk to some perceptive grower, a grower who was both committed to the church and who was willing to face facts in terms of what happened to farm workers, how wide their profit margin was and how narrow it was. It's always been my belief that it was primarily fears of what might happen, that governed them. But I wouldn't want to speak for a grower. I think that probably varies in terms of how large their holdings were, how efficient they were in managing their operation, and also perhaps to some extent upon the level of prices, what they could get for their grapes. I never got that much involved in their economics. What I was trying to do was to get them to see that farm workers were human beings. God is concerned about all human beings equally. The way in which we try to live by His word is by finding justice both for the farmer and for the laborer. And that the gap between what we who were part of the establishment, lived on and what farm laborers were making and were forced to live on, the conditions under which they were forced to live, that the gap was just tremendous. And that for that reason, we had to support their efforts to better their own condition. Now that logic is self-evident to us. You couldn't make them accept it.
When you think back over all of the meetings and the heated long meetings, does anyone or more especially come to mind as one that especially sticks in your memory?
You mean people who opposed us?
Uh-huh.
Oh, if I did, I wouldn't want to mention their names.
Oh, no, I understand.
No, there was one grower from the valley who served on our committee, who came to the meeting. He was a very, very, what shall I say, he tried very hard to see our point of view. But such growers were few and far between. By and large, they met, of course, in terms of their own organization. And I forget the name of the man who was the head of the Growers Association.
Alan Grant.
He, he saw us too as enemies. I remember one day I took the plane back from somewhere in the valley, and he was, lo and behold, I saw him there and I sat down beside him, I guess. So we had a discussion that lasted about an hour. he couldn't see me or my point of view, and I thought he was pretty much the protagonist of the establishment. Which he was, without any question.
In the annual meetings, when the budget issue became the focus for the struggle, had those supporting the farmers' point of view, had they done some pretty... were there a lot of those annual meetings where that was an issue, or were there just maybe two or three?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to see how far back that went. The only way I could do that would be to look through the minutes of the annual meetings. And they're all down at the conference office. Mm-hmm. Dick would have perhaps the clearest memory, mm-hmm, without referring to the records, mm-hmm, as to how long that or when it began, and how long it continued. For me, social action was, I say, if not the major direction, one of two major directions of my ministry.
What was the other one?
Huh?
What was the other one?
The other one was a pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. Preaching, proclaiming the gospel, ministering to people's needs as persons. In seminary days, I became involved with the people who were leaders in the social action movement. I remember I attended a meeting of the Student Volunteer. You know that association? They've been active for many years. In which the whole meeting was polarized between those who still felt that the mission of the student volunteer group was to enlist young men and young women for missionary work in terms of ministering to individuals, mm-hmm, in other countries around the world, and those who were sensitive and alive to the whole social action movement, which of course was in its ascendancy, I guess, during that time. And that was a battle back and forth. Mm-hmm. Then I went to Union Seminary in 1932-33. I had a fellowship to go there after I finished seminary. And there the thing was apparent in much clearer focus. The whole student body and the faculty was polarized in terms of social involvement, mm-hmm, and social action. And that was a tremendous year. Randall Niebuhr and Harry Ward, they were the leaders of the, mm-hmm, of the social action protagonists. And there were other members of the faculty who were still very conservative. And one thing you have to say about Union Seminary, anytime any leader of any significant field of human endeavor was available, they invited them to come, mm-hmm, and to address the faculty, mm-hmm, to address the student body. Mm-hmm. So that was really a year. Finally ended when the students, some people who were not very perceptive, raised a red flag on the flagpole one night. Of course, Harry Ward was at the outset very sympathetic to the communist cause. He went much further than Randall Niebuhr in terms of supporting the communist movement. Randall Niebuhr was perceptive enough to see that every movement, of course, had its faults, its weaknesses. And I think he very early saw that communism was not something you could support 100%, mm-hmm, even though you had to respect some of their insights. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between Marxism and communism, mm-hmm, in terms of how communism developed in Russia and all the cruelty that came out of that movement and all the suppression of human freedom.
In the UCC denomination, was there very much problem with members calling Caesar and the farm workers communists? Did that come up?
No, I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that people made those charges. Mm-hmm. If they did, I can't remember any a single one. Mm-hmm. That was very insignificant.
In your own experience, what role did Caesar play in either attracting church support from people like yourself and others that were supportive, or not attracting it?
Well, I think Caesar played, of course, the key role, both in organizing the farm workers and also in attracting those of us in the churches who were at all sensitive to the needs of farm labor and supportive in terms of efforts to alleviate their poverty and their conditions of living. But one thing I at least sensed from the beginning that for Caesar it was not simply a political matter, that he was also rooted in his religion, that he was both a prophetic religious man and also that he had his feet on the ground and knew what the needs were to organize a union. I heard one address that he gave to the California group after I had retired. He was down here on the peninsula somewhere. But for some reason or other, he laid out, you know, his life. And the steps in organizing the farm labor movement. And there were two things that he pointed out, that he said, we were learning step by step. But one thing we were resolved to do is to stay democratic, that the decision had to be made by the leaders themselves in a group. And he recognized that some of the things that the growers had said about him in the outset, you know, that he didn't understand, say, certain needs of organizing a strike movement, or that he perhaps needed to grow some more, needed to learn some more. He admitted that. He said, sure, we learned as we went. No question about that. We made mistakes. But we were resolved, you know, this was not going to be a top-down movement. So that, of course, increased my respect for him.
How about Chris's role? What did you perceive his role to be in this phenomenal success in drawing the churches in to support?
I think it was a key role, no question about it. He, of course, came out of the East Harlem Protestant Parish in New York City and worked with some people there. Where he much in the same way and, you know, at a different point, came face to face with those in the church who were committed, saw the need and the centrality, you might even say, of social justice to the gospel. And I respected him and admired him and enjoyed the opportunity of working with him from the very beginning. And we were pretty select nucleus there in that California Minor Ministry, Cliff Crummy and some of the others. There's a lady that came from the Christian Church.
Nellie Kratz.
Nellie Kratz is the one I was thinking of. And then the others, in varying degrees, were supportive of Chris. He had courage and he just simply led the way. Mm-hmm. And was always very good at interpreting, you know, what he was doing, what he saw the need for doing, and his ministry. It was a ministry for him.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chris says that Jim Drake was very, very key in what the migrant ministry was able to do with the churches through the migrant ministry after the strike began in Delano. Because he said, you know, he was our man on the inside. He really understood what had to be done. He understood what was happening. And he was the one who would let us know, because he said the others in the union were too busy to keep posting the church on, mm-hmm. you know, what was happening. But he said that Jim was very, very crucial in that he was their inside person whose job in part it was to let them know what was needed and how the church could be of service. Mm-hmm. Is that how you saw Jim's role?
Well, of course, I wasn't aware of how much he was doing that on the inside with Chris and the permanent staff. But I saw Jim as a committed church person, but also as a committed worker and organizer in terms of social action. I had the highest respect for him, I still do. Although I haven't kept in touch with him in recent years.
He's in Texas now, organizing Texas.
Organizing Texas for farm labor? No, he was with the woodcutters for a while.
I think he may still be with the woodcutters.
Is he?
I'm not exactly sure. He's in Harlingen. I don't know how to say it. Harlingen, mm-hmm. in Texas. I don't know how to pronounce the G in it, but that's where he is, and I hope to meet with him.
Yeah, the Texas farm labor movement has been real crazy. I just know that he was willing to, you know, to go where he saw the greatest need and put himself on the line all the way through without any question. I always got along great with him.
Well, I have an interest in understanding the role of the California Environment Ministry, later the National Farm Worker Ministry, in facilitating the farm workers' impact on the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever given that very much thought, how that worked, and whether the churches could have really been impacted by the farm workers' movement if there had not been that ecumenical entity?
No, I think that was a very important link. As a matter of fact, I don't know how it would have happened without the migrant ministry and Chris Hartmeyer. They were, and those of us who came from the denomination and worked together in this whole area. I think it was fortunate for us both that we had the California migrant ministry and that we had Chris. In Doug Still's days, it was still a matter of ministering to, you know, the physical needs and farm labor. Chris and Cesar Chavez and Jim Drake had moved into getting his feet on the ground in terms of really supporting what was needed for the farm workers to win that measure of justice, which they have achieved, which is still far from what it ought to be. Well, those 60s were great days. We weren't only involved in farm labor, but I was chairman of that commission. We were into anything that, you know, that played a role in social justice in San Francisco. And we started JSAC. Do you know if you've heard about that?
Yes.
Joint Strategy and Action Commission?
Yes. We had JSAC at Southern California as well, as you know.
Did you?
Cliff Crummy was telling me this morning about JSAC here.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it sounded exciting.
It was exciting. You had a good man, too, Presbyterian.
What really in your own early history made you so open to social justice work?
Well, I would lay it to basically two people, my father and Randall Niebuhr, who were very close.
Hmm.
Randall Niebuhr says that next to his own father, I guess it was either Randall or Richard, my father had the most influence on him. And he was open from the very outset. You know, he said you never had to fear truth, but you need to be open to truth, and that's what he lived.
Was he a clergyman?
Yes, he was first a teacher at Eden Theological Seminary and then the president of Theological Seminary for many years.
Mm.
So that's where I grew up.
Mm.
I was surrounded by the church and by the best minds and people in the church. So I was very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And also I couldn't escape the church. Randall Niebuhr appears in our denomination, the old Evangelical Synod, really was way out in terms of most of the church members. He fought many battles there. My father supported him. He and Richard Bowen. And of course, I read, I was mainly interested in books that came out by
So Chase was one of them. Kirby Page. And those were the pioneers in those days. There was one man that brought in economics. I can't remember his name. From the London School of Social... I don't remember the exact title either, but there was a professor there. That's the kind of thing I read and delighted in.
Were you there in the Valley on the occasion in 73 when John Bennett and someone else who I don't know came and awarded the farm workers the Reinhold Niebuhr Award for the year? Yeah. Did you know about that?
No, I didn't even know that.
1973.
The
UFW was awarded the Reinhold Niebuhr Award. And I have it with me.
While I was still a member of the Evangelical Reformed Church, I was elected to their committee on Christian Social Action. Mm-hmm. And I was on that committee during the time of the merger with the congregation people. And then they decided that the people who were presently serving on the two individual committees should form the new committee. So I was on the National Social Action Front for 12 years. And that, of course, meant that I was in touch with a lot of the leaders in that area.
So your denomination that you grew up in was the Evangelical...
First, the Evangelical Synod of North America, which was a result of a merger between the Lutheran and the Reformed churches in Europe in 18-something or other, when the emperors tried to combine the two. Then we merged with the Evangelical Reformed Church, which was the Reformed Church, I guess, in the United States, I guess, was their official name.
Evangelical and Reformed Church?
Evangelical and Reformed. That was their second name. And then finally, of course, was the merger with the Congregation of Christians. And that's how I came to be, I think that was the deciding factor on my serving on the conference staff. That happened while I was in Carmichael, that merger took place. And I was one member of the committee that wrote the Constitution for the Northern California Conference. Richard Narberg was the conference minister, and he said he wanted somebody from the Evangelical Reformed Church to be his associate. That's one reason he chose me.
You were a perfect choice.
Well, I don't know about that. I know I was just about to. I had just applied for a position with our National Social Action board, and I guess the director of that wrote Dick Narberg, and Dick Narberg called me up and said, "Well, Walter," he said, "would you like to work on our local conference board rather than this?" We loved California and were anxious to stay in California, so we chose it.
So rather than really making all of the contacts with the farm workers movement, rather than making a change in your ideas, it really became an opportunity for you to exercise the concerns and the point of view that you had.
Right, it was just an extension of one perfect situation where this kind of involvement of the church was needed. And I never had done it anywhere along the way. It was a matter of handling the opposition and trying to do a conscientious job of interpreting, why you were taking the stand that you did, why the church became involved.
There were so many people who were opposed, especially since your conference included Central Valley, but do you also have recollections about people who became supporters and were really helped in their own sense of ministry, both laity and clergy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I could perhaps tell you better the names of ministers who were supporting, and we really were on the front line in terms of one or two of the pastors of churches in the valley. And we took a lot of heat. Individual lay people don't stand out in my mind. We had groups of them over and over again. I've never been a man for details in my mind, dates and names of people and things like that, which is perhaps a shortcoming. No, I can't think of any people that stand out. I had some good people on our commission on the church and community that I was grateful for.
So that was what you called it, the Commission on Church and
Community?
Commission
on Church and Community. And I appreciated the fact when Dick Norberg called me, he knew of my social action involvement. But he gave me responsibilities in terms of the conference, which didn't limit it to that. He also asked me to be in charge of the Committee on Church and Ministry. Mm-hmm. I had to do with in-care students, ministry of standing. Well, of course, when you work with him, you were involved in a wide range of conference activity.
So in working on the conference staff, you staffed several commissions, and one of them was this Commission on Church and Community. Yeah.
But the major thrust of my staff involvement was always the social action and urban ministry. Mm-hmm. Because I worked with a Presbyterian man, what was his name, Fargo. Well, we went to Minneapolis after he left here. Well, I know his name, but I can't think of it right now. He and I were active in organizing the night ministry. He really took the initial steps, and I supported him in it. Among other things, we organized JSAC, and we worked with the Jewish people in terms of, you know, getting together all the social action people from the denomination, and even the Catholics, as far as the Archbishop would let them. Those were, for me, great days. Because that was, of course, in the air, too, during that day.
Yes. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to meet with me.
Well, I'm happy to do it. I appreciate the job you've undertaken.
Well, I hope
it'll I've
be
been
good.
Helpful.
Oh, you have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very interesting. If you think of anything else that you want me to know, either tell me now or I can let you know how to get in touch with me.
All right, you might do that. Put down your address or your phone number.